It's cut underneath my, would you stop? You caused that.
Catherine, you just love this show.
I do. You make it very special. All right. The Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. It is Wednesday, May 3rd, 1 o'clock. If you have a cell phone, please turn it off. There are people, I'm certain, who are listening all across the state. Today, we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 2004. It may come as a surprise to everyone here that there's a lot of interest in this bill. My understanding is that we have two overflow rooms plus people that are sitting in the lobby. We are going to do our best to get through as much of the testimony as we are able to in the time allotted. We do need to leave the room at 2:45 to make room for the next committee, and I'm going to keep us pretty close to that 2:45 adjournment just because there are so many people, and in the overflow rooms, we want to make sure that we are considerate of the 3 o'clock meetings and allow everybody room to move. In order to get through the folks, we are going to limit your comments to 3 minutes each. We'll have a timer up on the wall, and it will count down, so you'll be able to see where you're at. And I'm just saying this now so that nobody takes it personally. Once it gets to zero, I will ask you to, you know, finish your sentence and sum up. The only exceptions to that are members, because I would ask members to try to keep their comments to 3 minutes or less as well. And then we also, once we get to the public testimony, we will alternate panels. We'll do a panel of people in support, and then we'll do a panel of people in opposition. We'll call people up in panels of three, and I will announce the panel that's on deck so that if you are in an overflow room or you're sitting outside in the lobby listening, that will give you time to get here to offer that testimony. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is I noticed that there are children in the room, and I always like to point out that children are welcome here and children should always be seen and heard. So if children are making child sounds, please stay and don't feel like you need to go away. We are very happy to have you all here. So with that, I am going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2004A, and we will have Matt, our committee administrator, give us a summary of the bill.
All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2004A permits a landlord to terminate a month-to-month tenancy without cause in the first 6 months of a tenancy with 30-day notice. It requires cause and 30-day notice when the landlord terminates a month-to-month tenancy after 6 months or terminates a fixed-term tenancy. It specifies exceptions and requirements for their use. It permits certain landlords living on the property to terminate a tenancy without cause with 30-day notice during the first year of a tenancy or with 60-day notice thereafter. The measure permits the tenant to terminate month-to-month tenancies or a fixed-term tenancy without cause with specified 30-day notice. It requires the landlord to offer a renewal of a fixed-term tenancy within 90 days of the end of the tenancy. It requires tenancies to convert to a month-to-month tenancy if landlord does not offer a renewal, the tenant fails to accept an offered renewal, or the tenant fails to terminate the tenancy. It establishes penalties and a one-year statute of limitations for violations. The measure also permits cities and counties to implement rent stabilization programs and specifies requirements for such programs. It sets effective dates for the fixed term and month-to-month tenancy provisions. It declares emergency and is effective on passage. And in the House, there was a minimal expenditure impact statement and a no revenue impact statement.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our colleagues. And I understand Representative Meek is on his way as well, so we will bring him up when he arrives in the room.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Moniz Anderson. I represent the Gresham area. And I want to let you know we all need safe, stable, and affordable a place to call home. And this was really brought to me when I was campaigning during the summer. And I think Senator Denbrough was also campaigning in my district. We have a lot of poverty in that district, and I have found so many examples. I visited probably around 300, I average about 300 doors a week when I was campaigning. And the number one issue was housing. housing was the number one issue. So I got on this bandwagon way last summer and said we need to do something. And we and there were so many other people that felt the same way. There's an apartment complex near me, and they were seniors who are just living on Social Security. And they, $50 the first year, then $100 the next year, then $100, and now they're priced out, and they have to be displaced. We need to do something. We are in a crisis, and we have to do something for our constituents. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Manning.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to be here. Excuse me. This one is a really tough one. It's very complicated and stuff, you know, but I just want to kind of...
Senator Manning, you need to identify yourself for the record, please.
You know what?
Thank you.
Everybody that comes to my committee, I remind them of the same thing, too. So my name is James Ivory Manning. I'm senator from Senate District 7, which is Eugene, West, and... North Eugene, Santa Clara, and a whole points in between to include Junction City. Thank you. I apologize. Before I start, I want to just kind of share a little personal story with the committee. And as one of myself, you know, as a child growing up, I have experienced homelessness issues. My parents were separated for as long as I can remember, and I remember pretty much fending for myself a lot of times because no place to stay. You know, you have a house where, you know, you can take some of the kids. I was 10 of us in my family. You take some of the kids, and then the rest you had to kind of disperse outward and stuff. And most of the time it was like, well, you know, he's one of the boys and stuff. And, you know, boys do pretty good on their own. Not necessarily true all the time, especially in these days. During my tenure in the military, I've gone around and I've visited countries and stuff, and I've seen homelessness issues over there. I've seen little kids out foraging for food, trying to make the best of it. They can't go to school because they don't have any place that's stable. And many times we wonder why we have a large prison population. It's not because people are born to commit crimes. It's because we as a society has forced people into survival mode. And they're doing things in order to kind of make sure that they are taking care of themselves. So House Bill 2004, I'm not going to go into a lot of the technical details because you have a lot of experts here, but I would like to share over the past few months, this bill and the topic of Oregon housing crisis have dominated many of the conversations. Early on, I received a lot of emails in opposition from landlords, owners, and property managers since the bill was first introduced in the House, and many of those concerns have been addressed through amendments. We now have a bill before you that is a product of listening and to those concerns and compromising so that the bill does two main things. It provides tenants with some stabilization in terms of where they are able to live. The no-cause evictions have really created an issue here. In addition to that, I did write a novel, but I'm not going to do the novel today.
That's good, because we're trying to stick to about 3 minutes.
What this bill does do, it does provide some kind of stabilization, and this is a values bill. It's not has nothing to do with party affiliations or anything like that. It's how we treat each other, how we expect our children to treat each other. And this body here has the authority and has the task right now to look at things beyond what would seem to be favoritism or looking over another and just come to the conclusion that we are here to serve the people. And it's going to be a long road, but we have to come together to make sure that everybody is addressed, particularly the vulnerable ones among us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator. Representative Power, and then we'll have you do cleanup. Representative Meek, is that okay?
Okay. Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, my name is Karen Power. I represent House District 41, Oak Grove, Milwaukee, Southeast Portland. We've heard the statistic before, but it's worth repeating. 4 in 10 in Oregon are renters. That's nearly 1.5 million Oregonians across our state, in your districts and in mine, who are vulnerable to unpredictable displacement because our current law allows for nearly unfettered and unilateral tenant removal at any time with no reason. At the same time, we have incredibly low vacancy rates and escalating rents. More and more people are moving to our state, and supply is not kept up with demand. This creates intense pressures that make it easier for bad actors to prey on tenants, refusing to make repairs, threatening eviction, discriminating, and no-cause eviction is a tool that is too easily misused with impunity, undermining our state's habitability and fair housing protections. Earlier this year, we celebrated the 49th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. Despite this landmark law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of race, color, sex, national origin, or religion, we see far too many cases of eviction due to tenants' identities. Oregonians particularly vulnerable to displacement are people of color, those who work for low wages, seniors, and those with disabilities on fixed incomes. Escalating rents have the same impact as eviction, an economic eviction. This is not just a Portland problem. In fact, a recent LendingTree study showed that the city in the nation with the greatest rent increases in the last 5 years was Bend, Oregon. Number two on the list in the nation, Prineville. The study measured changes in cities based on rent prices, home values, foreclosures, influx of new businesses, and the diversity of population changes. Four Oregon cities were in the top 10: Bend, Salem, Eugene, and Portland. Our communities are changing fast, and we need to allow local jurisdictions the flexibility to address changing markets and allow people who have built these communities to continue to live in them rather than be priced out. No cause eviction or economic eviction, these can force families into homelessness. This crisis is impacting our schools, businesses, employees, and for some of us, our families and our friends. Some have suggested that the solution to this problem is supply. And yes, supply will help. The recent rate of underbuilding is indeed surprising given our recent economic recovery, and we will continue to work hard to support a variety of policy approaches that supports further supply in the legislature. However, we must act now to ensure stability for families, children, seniors, and everyone in our communities, and to give local governments the tools they need to prevent displacement in their communities. This bill is just and is measured, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Meek, welcome.
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, my name is Mark Meek, and I'm representative for House District 40, which is Gladstone, Oregon City, and unincorporated Clackamas County. And as I reflect on my first introduction to House Bill 2004 in January, I admit that I didn't like it, and I felt it was a pendulum swung too far in the other way, and that the bill wasn't the answer. We need supply, we need more housing, and we need to encourage more investment in our communities. But however, as I sat through hours of testimony in both my committee meetings and my own town halls, I began to hear from both tenants and landlords about the depth and the breadth of the current housing crisis. I began to see how this concept could help protect those among us that who are most vulnerable, and with some changes could protect landlords who are trying to do the right thing. What I heard from tenants is that a no-cause eviction can turn the tenants' world upside down, and that they need stability to provide for their families. I also heard that some landlords are evicting tenants and raising rents in an opportunistic way on the backs of hardworking families. Finally, I heard from landlords and property owners who are worried about this policy that it would stifle growth. I approached this from a variety of perspectives, as a legislator, as a community volunteer, as a landlord, and as a realtor. Using those lenses, I went to work and crafted amendments that would provide fairness and stability for Oregon's working families, but also preserve a property owner's ability to operate a business and earn a profit. I listened to constituents and to colleagues and gave careful consideration to all concerns. The amended bill that passed the House Bill 2004A, is the result of those conversations. And here's a brief summary of my amendments. Just cause: exempt small landlords, four or fewer units, from the relocation expenses. Reduce reallocation assistance to 1 month's rent. And then allow no-cause evictions during the first 6 months of tenant occupancy. How am I doing on time?
You're okay.
Okay. The rent stabilization part of it, I wanted to make sure that if a city or county creates a stabilization program, that they must provide landlords with a fair rate of return. Number two, allow landlords to petition for a rent increase beyond the amount allowed in the program if they aren't making a fair rate of return. And then third, to exempt new construction from the issuance of certificate of occupancy for at least 5 years. I think these amendments are good policy and brought balance to the bill. Oregon is in a housing crisis, and I believe that the tenant protections in this bill are sorely needed. There's overwhelming evidence that that we must act now to address the emergency. Oregon families are struggling against record rent increases and housing insecurity. House Bill 2004A will address the instability and inequality in today's rental market supply, while ensuring that more housing can continue to come online and supply can continue to grow. My hope is that as supply increases and the market catches up, that rent stabilization will become less and less necessary. I hope you stand with me and the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners who have endorsed this bill to make a difference for hardworking families in Oregon. And thank you very much.
Thank you all very, very much. And Representative Hernandez, did you want to add anything?
I didn't check in with folks.
Chair Gelsler, members of the committee, my name is Diego Hernandez, State Representative for House District 47, East Portland. So I wasn't supposed to talk today, but on Sunday I had a town hall, and I had folks come to me who had just received a $200 rent increase notice. And these are very low-income folks. And just the face of desperation just got to me. And even though I've heard these stories over and over again, it just made me realize how important this bill is. Let me take you back a little bit. One of my experiences with a single mom of three kids who received a no-cause eviction, I went over to her apartment to see she had put in notices for repairs and received a no-cause eviction shortly thereafter. And so I went to go see what kind of repair she was asking for. She was asking for help in removal of mold on her windows. There was one window that was broken by the kitchen, and the door was broken. The door wouldn't close all the way. I just couldn't fathom that this exists in our society. And this is why I'm really passionate about this bill. Because folks who are wanting to live in healthy conditions are being retaliated against. And so my district is very diverse. I got a lot of immigrant and refugee. I have family shelters. I have a family shelter that houses 90 families and children. And on that same Sunday where my town hall is, I went to go volunteer to feed, like I do every month, the families. And it occurs to me that a lot of the folks in my conversations that are there because they've been displaced because of huge rent increases and because of evictions that aren't fair to them. And disproportionately, some of them even cite being discriminated against because of who they are. So anyway, I just want to share that personal story. I just can't take it hearing these stories anymore. It's disheartening. And I hope we can do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate all of you taking time to come over.
Yeah, I have one question.
Okay, one question.
Representative Meek.
Yes, Senator.
In reading your amendment, it provides landlords with a fair rate of return for the rental of dwelling units as determined by the city or the county.
Chair Gelser, yes. Senator Olson, yes. That's
my question is, would the city or the county be a fair arbiter of a fair return of investment?
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, the mechanism should be set up, and this is unheard of territory. This bill actually just removed the preemption and allows this idea to grow some energy, whether it be in the city or county around our state. So this whole prospect is a new idea. Now, when it comes to me providing a profit for my own company, my own business, I basically make sure when you heard the term pencil out, doesn't pencil out. when most property investors buy a property, they put 25% down, and then they calculate based on that 25% if they're going to be able to finance, maintain the property, and take care of the administration or management of it on the rent income that is brought in at that property to service all those things. And usually, folks, if they can break even or make a little bit of money, then that pencils out. Well, if we have an organization or a community or a committee that's set up in these communities, whether it's county or city, that part of my putting in those amendments is that make sure we have a you're able to get a fair rate of return. It's if you are already a property owner, and if you may say part of the petition to get additional rent income because you added windows, you added some different things to help the community live a little cheaper with better heating sources, you're able to go in and get a petition for that. So my hope is that I am not sure if we're going to go by a consumer price index or the rate of inflation, but some type of number that says, Here's your product, and now you have an opportunity to make a fair rate of return. And now some people are more efficient than others, and they can make a better fair rate of return. So we can't necessarily base it on certain things. But my goal is that if this does, you know, get instituted, that landowners and property owners and investors are able to make a good fair rate of return.
Thank you very
much. Can I, if you don't mind, Senator Olson, I want to acknowledge that Representative Meek is correct in that this would be a new tool for cities to use to help stabilize their communities. But the process of evaluating what is a reasonable rate of return is not something that would be new for cities. For example, cities will work with private company waste haulers on a regular basis to determine an annual rate of return for their businesses as they set rates for garbage hauling within their cities and counties. So these are extensive processes that already take place in a number of different sectors within the communities. I just wanted to give you a little bit of a snippet from one of my conversations with a former colleague in Beaverton. She characterized this as a tool, not a weapon, that they want to use again, you know, in helping to stabilize their communities. So I think there's a lot of good work that could be done here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, I think we're going to move on and hear all these people that have come out. Thank you all very much. And again, as we move to the public testimony, the timer will be running up there for 3 minutes. And when you start, it's really important to introduce yourself for the record, your first and last name. And so we're going to start with the opponents list. Michelle Barth, Barb Havard, Mark Nichols, and Terry Llewellyn. And that gets us all the folks on that list that are from over 100 miles away. And then on deck, we are going to have from the proponents Patty J, Laura Lucia Nelson, or Laura Kusha Nelson, Julia Akins, and Stefan Ostrich. And when I say names wrong, please forgive me. And welcome. You can start in any order you wish.
Hoping not to be first because I haven't done this before, but
it'll be great, I can tell.
Chair Gelser and committee members, my name is Michelle Barth, and I am a landlord in Springfield, Oregon, and so I'm here opposing Senate Bill 2004. So I have three main issues that I have with the bill. One is the no-cause eviction. The other is required to pay tenants when you do ask them to leave, and rent control. So for the eviction, you know, I know that renters have horror stories, but so do landlords. We have many horror stories that included a great deal of expense and time because you get one bad renter, and that's all it takes. So as a landlord, I have no desire to get rid of good tenants. They are there to stay. And the only reason that we ask them to leave is if they have done something that is a problem. And any time that we have to get someone out, it costs us time and money. So we're not there trying to get people through there and for no cause leave them, have them out on the streets. So I don't have the resources to hire an attorney to every time that I want someone to leave because I've had a problem. Trying to prove cause it gets into a legal battle, and you give people 90 days notice. That's a lot of time to do a lot of damage, and then trying to get and recoup any of that from them is just, it doesn't happen. We are, every time we rent, we're taking a risk. It's a big part of our net worth that we've got out there that we're sharing with tenants. And so it's a risk that I don't like to see, that I don't have some control to make sure that something bad isn't going to happen to our property. And when we have to go through hoops to get someone out that has been bad, it is just, I think, wrong, and I'm not equipped to do that on a regular basis. So I think that, you know, landlords, we need to have protection too as well. Requiring tenants to pay rent, as I mentioned, we only let them ask them to leave if there's been a problem, which typically means they've already cost us money and time. So if I have to then pay them because they have to leave, it costs me money too. Every time that I have to try to go out and advertise and get someone in, and I've lost time in the home for rent. So I don't think that we should have to pay and tenants not. For our rent control, we have a couple rentals, and it is our retirement plan. So it is a job in itself, and how we earn our living. And I'm not aware of any other regulations. Oh, seriously?
It goes so fast, but thank you. Who's next?
You've got the microphone.
Yeah. Here, I'll go. All right. Yeah, hi, Chairman Gelser and the committee members. My name is Bob Havard. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm a landlord, and I appreciate being able to share my thoughts with you. Yeah, there are some big problems, and I thought they were very well outlined earlier, that rents, first of all, there's a big shortage of housing, both rental and private housing, and rents are very, very expensive now. And renters are, I think they use the word insecurity, they're unsure how long they'll be able to stay, so it's a bad situation. So I understand kind of the motivation for this proposal. My concern is that it's very appealing in some ways, and I think, though, that it's a short-term fix, and long-term it's going to be, I think, devastating, actually, to not only landlords but to the renters as well. For example, there's several things. One is I typically rent way under what the fair market is, and I do this for a few reasons. One is I have a little altruistic bone somewhere, and I want to be helpful. But it also, it's a win-win. It's helping the renters, but it's also helping me. If they feel like they're getting a good deal, then they're more apt to take good care of the place and want to stay. So that's less work for me in terms of turnover. So one of the reasons that I feel confident in doing this is that I know that if I'm 67, I'm starting to get more medical bills, and my expenses are going up. Sewer bills are going up. Derek can attest to that. But I always know that if I need to, I can at least hopefully over time increase the rents to take care of that. However, if they're capped, and I don't know at what rate they'd be capped, I and many other landlords are more apt to try and maximize the annual cap if they can, to try and stay at least up with the curve. And my question is, how does that affect, I mean, how does that help the tenants if we're really going to try and protect our investment that way? Wherever rent control has been tried, it ultimately is disastrous. It decreases investor interest in building and owning rental properties, and that leads to less construction of new rentals, and the sale of single-family homes or single-family rentals, and some are even converting their rentals, their multiplex rentals, into condominiums and just getting out. So the supply is going to go down, and once again, I just ask, how ultimately does that really help the renters in this whole situation? I think sort of undermining the no-cause evictions will similarly harm tenants. And I was going to give a story about I'm running short on time. But I think by being able to get rid of a problem tenant, you make the living situation much better for the other surrounding tenants.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm Mark Nichols. I represent Southern Oregon Rental Owners Association and myself. I would like you to vote 2004-6 down, or I guess it's -8. As a landlord, I want to preserve my ability to serve no-cause notices. This is especially important when issues are hard to prove, such as drug dealing out of a rental. All transactions done inside a house, you can't see the transaction happening because the people go into the house, make the transaction, and then they come out. Hence, it's impossible to take to prove in court, and it prohibits the landlord from giving a cause notice because of a lack of proof. Further, at the end of the lease, the bill calls for the rent to become a month-to-month. This is a change from the past, and here's how it works. At the end of the lease, the landlord makes an offer to renew the lease. If the tenant turns the lease, the one-year lease down, for instance, then the term of the lease becomes month-to-month, unless the tenant terminates the contract. In the past, when the tenant does not accept a new lease, the lease is finished and the tenant moves out. This is consistent with contract law, offer and acceptance or rejection. In contract law, if an offer is rejected, there's no contract. This bill flies in the face of contract law. Many landlords do not want a month-to-month rental. They want the stability of having a long-term lease, and I might say that tenants also want long-term leases because they want that stability. The landlords want the lease to end in the spring and summer because it is easier to fill vacancies in the spring and summer. Most renters move in the spring and summer, so if you fill your vacancy during the winter, the rental has a higher probability of sitting vacant for a longer period of time. I have had this happen. My rental sat vacant in the winter and then filled in the spring. I also want to make note that this bill has no sunset provision, so after the building is caught up, it doesn't go away. It stays forever. So consider carefully what you do when you vote on these landlord-tenant issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Terry Llewellyn. I come over from Bend today. My wife and I are native Bendites. I've been a general contractor for 27 years. We have either built or remodeled and own 26 rental units, whether they be houses or multiplexes. My wife is an active real estate agent, a top producer. She's been in the business 21 years. We have been a rental owner for 21 years, and we've also been a member of the Central Oregon Rental Owners Association for 17 plus years, and I'm a past president of the association. I want to talk a little bit about not only that if this bill passes, the devastation that it creates, it's already had a devastating effect on our community. I'm sure it has across the state. Once Speaker of the House Tina Kotek started tweeting that this was coming up, it spread like wildfire, that there was a rent control. That was the main thing we heard, rent control, and that they would set a cap on rents and then a percentage of increase per year on that rent, and so people reacted and said, I don't want to get caught behind that curve, so I'm going to go ahead and raise my rents now, because if you are, which a lot of people are holding their rents low because they're good tenants, they've been there a long time, I don't want to raise the rents, they don't give me any trouble, it's perfect. But then when you throw rent control, they immediately have to increase that rent, or if you're renting a place for $500 when the market's $800 and you only get a 5% increase per year with rent control, you'll never catch that curve. So I think there's already been a devastating effect on this deal before it's even passed. The other thing is this bill has an emergency clause that enacts the no cause notice and that kind of stuff, but it allows the cities and counties to invoke rent control. So there's going to be some time between when this thing, if this thing passes, to when that rent control actually takes effect. So there's going to be another reaction and raising rents on a mad scramble to get in under that deadline. So I would like to see more focus put on supply and demand. That law cannot be ignored. And we've got some great plans over on Central Oregon. It's pretty easy to expand the urban growth boundary and get some more supply and cure this problem. And the last thing I want to say is there seems to be a lot of talk that us landlords and tenants have an adversarial relationship. That is totally false. I love my tenants. They're friends of mine. And it's been that way for 26 years. So thank you for that.
Just a quick question.
Yes. Yeah.
If we had to have a cap on rent, on rents, I would like to know what amount of rent do you think is reasonable, and how many times do you think there should be an increase in rent?
If I can answer real quick, that's market dependent. When things were tough in the rental market, we didn't raise rents for over 10 years. And then when the market heated up and we had the supply and demand got off balance, then it cost so much to have new stuff coming on. We got tight on the deal. We started raising rents, but 10 years, no rent increases. And then when we start to get a little bit, then it starts going out of control. And I've heard terms of 5%, 7%. I've heard one guy say Portland will be 0%. So it is. I think it should be a market-based. I don't think there's a good answer for it. I mean,
and do you think that the rents should be increased two or three times during the year? Those are the two questions.
No, I... We've never done that.
May I also address your question?
Yes, please.
So, Senator Anderson, I think the problem you're going to find, too, is that different people have different levels of investment. There's a housing, the prices of housings are going up as well. So people purchase their homes for, some people may have purchased it low, some people may have purchased it high. To find a correct amount to say someone's going to get a return on their investment, you're not going to have an equal, fair way of doing that, because you've got different expenses and different mortgages that people are paying.
All right, and we've got folks that are on a time crunch, so we need to. We've got 8 pages of people. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have Patty J, Laura Chucha Nelson, Julia Akins, and Stefan Ostrich, who I understand needs to leave by 1:45, so we'll have Stefan go first.
A little flexibility.
All right. And then on deck, we're going to have Michael Feves, Dan Hayes, Q. Leroy Begley, and Susan Dekoff, with apologies for my pronunciation to everybody. Welcome. Stefan, why don't you start?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson. My name is Stefan Ostrach. I live in Eugene. I have 5 rental units that I own, and I am fully supportive of this Bill 2004A. I don't see any way it's going to interfere with my business. I can't understand why people feel they have to evict people with no cause. If they have cause, listening to the other landlords recently, I mean, you don't have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. You have to have some evidence, and your own observations is evidence. If, you know, if you see a unit where people are coming and going and staying for only a short time, and it's looks like there's drug dealing going on there, that's evidence, and that would be all you would need in the kind of court that you would be dealing with. If there are bad tenants, you've got cause to evict them. If there aren't bad tenants, you shouldn't be able to evict them without cause. It just makes sense to me. Also, this bill does not institute rent control. It allows municipalities or counties that option. So it would be a whole other process through whatever government bodies there are there that would have to agree to do it and have public testimony and input before it would ever happen. It's not too likely to happen in most communities in this state. So, I mean, again, just to recap and save a little bit of time, I just don't see, you know, even as a 70-year-old owner of five properties, why anything in this bill would be objectionable to me.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and committee members. My name is Patty Jay. I am a veteran of the Oregon Air National Guard, former aide to Senator Rod Monroe, a mother of three, and I experienced the fear of a no-cause eviction last year. In March of 2016, as I was recovering from surgery, I went out to get my mail, and I happened to notice a piece of paper tacked to the wall outside my door, and it was a 60-day notice to vacate the property. No cause, no reason, no conversation with the landlord. That definitely put me into a kind of a desperation move. The only thing I can think that would cause this notice was the day after the contractor completed remediation on black mold in the bathroom that I complained about. That's when we received the eviction notice. So that put me into a flurry of beginning funds together to try to find a new place to move. I was happy for Clackamas County Veterans Services to give us rent assistance. We found a place. We were in the middle of the school year. I had a freshman at Milwaukee High. We were able to find a place close to the school. However, I'm now paying $400 more a month. So, you know, the reality of this, it's happening to everybody at every level. I've got a great job now. I'm really happy and stable. However, that fear that it could happen again never quite leaves my family. And my boys deserve, our families deserve stability. And I would just like to read something that my oldest son wrote when I testified before the House a couple months ago. For me, eviction, especially without cause, has had a really unsettling and alienating effect. Without the security of a house, there is no home. Without security of a neighborhood, there is no community. Without need for justification and eviction, there is no justice. Please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Julie Akins. I come from Ashland, where the vacancy rate is less than 2%. I come to you as a tenant. I am also a working journalist and have been covering this issue for quite some time now, and a professor at Southern Oregon University, where I teach in the communications department. I've worked all my life. I continue to work, and I received a no-cause eviction 60-day notice, which was somewhat ironic because when I received my notice, I was covering affordable housing and homelessness, and touring from Seattle to Los Angeles trying to figure out the new faces of homelessness, and it looked as if I would become one of the new faces. Mm-hmm. So while I worked during the day covering the issue, I laid awake at night and wondered if I would be sleeping in my car, and if I would be sleeping in my car because I received my eviction in February, would I die in my car? Because it's very cold, and I'm aware that people die when they're evicted from their homes and can't get another place to live, because I've covered that and I've met the families of those people. So it was a terrifying experience. Yes, I tried to negotiate with my landlord. No, he was not interested in negotiating. I moved out, and my rent in the one-bedroom apartment went from $750 a month to $1,150 a month. What he did to garner that extra rent was a single coat of paint. So I moved into another apartment where I now, at 55 years old, having owned four homes and been a landlord myself, have to have a roommate in order to survive, which I'm not particularly proud of. But I am willing to do that in order to live, as most people are. I affirm what the landlords have told you, which is that people shouldn't be evicted for no cause. They themselves said, we don't want this, but we don't want to evict people without cause, so why not codify it? They seem to be in agreement about that. They also seem to be in agreement that it's somewhat egregious to raise rents without any particular reason. We can talk about supply and demand, but in the meantime, we need to do something because we're in a crisis, and it's urgent. And make no mistake, people do die from homelessness. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you all for considering this. My name is Laura Kusha-Nelson, and my partner and I were recently displaced from our home in the small community of Neetarts in Tillamook County. Surrounded by the natural beauty of the Oregon coast, Neetarts has a small population and many visitors through the spring and summer. We began renting our home there just over a year ago and were welcomed by our neighbors. We quickly made new friends and bonded with the tight-knit community, and we all shared in the secret that the tourists only get to glimpse that we found a little piece of paradise. And Neetarts has a relaxed atmosphere, and it's the kind of place where a sunset and a walk down the beach can melt away the day's worries and remind us of the many gifts that we have in this world. Over the last year, we learned that the property we were renting was in a state of disrepair and that the property managers had little to no support to address the concerns of the tenants. Lack of weatherproofing became apparent as the temperatures dropped and the rains increased as winter came on. We bundled ourselves and we put out buckets and fans to try to keep dry, and we started looking for alternate housing, found that many of our neighbors were in the same situation and finding options to be few to none. We also studied the Oregon tenant-landlord law and found that the law requires landlords to keep the place habitable, and we asked for repairs, and in response, we were served a 30-day no-cause eviction notice. In the middle of one of the coldest months of the year, we were faced with the threat of losing our home. Stricken with anxiety and fear, we were consumed with studying Oregon law and preparing for the possibility of defending our rights in court. We spent countless hours documenting our claims, writing letters, speaking with paralegals and an attorney in order to find some security that we'd be prepared and protected under the law. We received no communication from our landlord. The uncertainty of whether our home would be taken from us was emotionally and physically draining. We depend on our home for our self-employment, and we supplement our earnings with part-time and seasonal work, and we can't depend on our ability to work from home or pursue employment in our area without knowing we have a home. Speaking with lawyers, we were warned how challenging the defense would be. We made the difficult decision to put our belongings into storage and reach out to other communities. The experience has been stressful and costly, and I look forward to returning to a sense of normalcy. We're good tenants and responsible people, and we got a no-cause termination notice because we asked for repairs. Lack of housing pushed us out of our community and into uncertainty. My former home in Neetarts, still unrepaired with its leaking roof and unlawful conditions, now has new tenants. The cycle of abuse continues. And I request to the committee to please support HB 2004 to provide fairness and stability for the millions of Oregonians who are renters. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much. Next up, we have Michael Faves, Dan Hayes, Q. Leroy Bailey, and Susan Dekoff. And on deck, we'll have Sybil Hebb, Nick G. Verdugo, Elaine Friesen-Strang, and Robin Honnell.
Madam Chairman, Susan, I don't...
Oh. Well, I'm going to take Susan's place.
Susan signed up, thought she just had to be here.
Oh, okay.
So, with your permission, Dennis, who is...
the next on the list. Got him.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Dennis Cassidy, yes?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Welcome. Why don't you start, Dennis?
Okay. Senator Yeltsin and committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm a Eugenian, born and raised there. I'm a small landlord. I'm the current vice president of Rental Owners Association of Lane County. I bought my first two properties 45 years ago while living at home and going to the university. My parents were a good role model for me. They had one or two while I was growing up, and I helped them during that time. Oregon is a desirable place to live, and we're fortunate to be able to live here. People are going to continue moving in here whether we like it or not. There is a housing shortage, and this proposed House Bill 2004, in my opinion, is not going to help the issue. What we need is more housing, both residential and owner-occupied. The builders or investors, if this passes, in my opinion, will kind of shy away from the state of Oregon as a place of doing no business. I've got an example. I had a duplex at one point in time that shared a utility room with a shared washer and dryer. And an example would be a good tenant, a single lady. She came up missing undergarments in the dryer. And the other side of the duplex was a single male. And there was no way to prove that her missing items out of the dryer were out of the dryer were related to his tenancy. But I don't want to lose a good tenant as a result of having a marginal tenant in the other one. And if the good tenant comes to me in that example and says, if you don't get rid of him, I'm going to move. Yet he's not in violation of anything in the contract of the rental agreement or the lease agreement. I don't want to lose the good renter. My only option would be to give a no-cause eviction to the one that is in question. Another example would be if they had a shared driveway and the good renter comes to me and tells me that the renter on the other side is parking their automobile so close that they can't get into their automobile by other than entering from the passenger side. And I explain to the tenant, the one that's parking too close, that he needs to, you know, move a little further away. He continues to do so. He's still not in violation of the rental agreement or the lease agreement. But I don't want to lose the good tenant as a result of the actions of a bad tenant. So I'm urging you to vote no on House Bill 2004A. I don't believe it's good for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you today regarding House Bill 2004. I'm a landlord and someone who owns a company that serves landlords, and there is no question that we have a housing
emergency. Can you start with your name?
Dan Hayes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I apologize. No question that we have a housing emergency. And for every tragic story you hear about landlord behavior, and as a fellow landlord, it's difficult to hear these stories. I'm sure for residents that are great residents, it's difficult to hear about nightmare resident stories, but both exist. I urge you to vote no on House Bill 2004 because it will do relatively little to address both concerns. In fact, I would submit to you that the unintended consequences of House Bill 2004 will have the opposite effect. Rent control, and especially what is termed as next generation rent control, where a property owner is guaranteed a fair rate of return, will ensure a few things. I've spent many years in the revenue space with a large soft drink company. I can tell you that when you fix prices, and rent control, regardless of the percentage amount, is fixing prices, you will absolutely fix prices. We already see this in Portland, Oregon, where, and it would be interesting to see by show of hands in the room, how many landlords have avoided rent increases over several years to reward a good tenant. Those landlords now, would you like to take a guess at what the most popular rent increase is in Portland, Oregon? 9.9%. So when you fix prices, you fix prices, and it will absolutely have the opposite effect of what you intend. Additionally, if you fix a margin, for example, how will the landlord have the resources necessary to invest back in that property to maintain said property? If you want to limit a landlord's ability to have retribution, then put some legislation in place that talks about you can't issue a no-cause notice to vacate if in the last 6 months you had a maintenance request from a tenant. This blunt instrument that House Bill 2004 is will absolutely require landlords to behave in ways that they're not behaving today. And finally, we're currently not building enough units. If you look at Portland Comprehensive Plan, we need 1.2 to 1.6% additional units just to keep up with demand. That equates to about 3,500 to 4,500 units a year. Between 97 and 2005, a pretty robust housing market, we built less than 3,000. Developers, regardless of what Mr. Meeks did in terms of excluding new construction, developers will and already have left the city of Portland, and they will leave the state of Oregon to other markets such as Denver, Seattle, Sacramento. And this state will not be able to keep up with demand. And I know this, when you have supply constriction and demand growth, I don't care what controls there are, you will have a bad situation in terms of rent price. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Afternoon, Chair. My name is Leroy Begley and fellow committee members.
Sometimes
we try.
Yes, I'm afraid that old what's-his-name snuck in here. Two things I'd like to go through real quick. The city of Eugene on the Register Guard this morning showed that they are contemplating building a 12-story housing for students. I am real curious, and this is speculation on my part, whether they will continue to do this. We heard testimony that Bend is hard for renters, Eugene and Prineville. As you committee members, you know that Prineville just scored a big, and I believe it's Google. So are you going to have investors go over there and build those houses? For not a guaranteed return. So now to my personal thoughts. Right now, according to the landlord-tenant law, if I rent to a person and without my knowledge they allow another person to move in, which this happens, you can almost talk to every landlord, this happens to them. Once that person has established what they call residency for 30 days, then you have to go through the eviction process to get them out. There's nothing in this bill that says I wouldn't have to pay for them to move, even though I never approved for them to live there. Go on down. If you start reducing the amount of funds that can be charged, then you're also reducing revenue to the state of Oregon because you're not going to have it. Upkeep, in order, it's just like your car. If you don't wash your car but once a year, it's going to have problems. So what do you do? I'm not suggesting you raise the rent every 2 weeks, but most landlords, I will go out of my way to find a good tenant because they are one in a million. One of our biggest problems also when you're renting to somebody, most of them are month to month. These people don't have the income, and if one of them reverts back to a drug problem, I'm sorry, you're up a creek because it takes a long time to get them out. And when you lose $4,000, $5,000, or $6,000, you need to recoup that. And one of the biggest things that I've heard, and I hope this doesn't happen, but a lot of the small landlords are talking about getting out of the pool, reduce the pool. And also one thing real quick, if you have...
Oh, no.
Can I tell you real quick about black mold? The state of Oregon, their health department, has a program, and most of black mold is caused by neglect by the tenant, allowing water and not being told when it happens.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chair Gelzer and Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Michael Fevis, last name spelled F-E-V-E-S. I'm a third-generation housing provider. Our family has provided housing in the Portland area for over 100 years. We service mostly lower and middle-income people. Many of our tenants are first-time renters, but we do have several tenants that have been with us for over 30 years. I believe that House Bill 2004 is short-sighted and it's bad public policy because it doesn't really address the core issue here, which is a housing shortage and affordability of housing. I provided 3 pages of bullet points that describe exactly why House Bill 2004 is bad. Obviously, in 3 minutes, I don't have enough time. Let me tell you a little story, though, about a tenant and why an example of why this is a bad bill. We had a tenant who was a very nice man, lived in the apartment for about 9 months, came to us and said, oh, can I get a dog? We said, sure. You look like a responsible guy. He paid his pet deposit. He signed the pet agreement forms and all that kind of stuff. And a few weeks after him getting the dog, we started getting complaints from his neighboring tenants. The dog was defecating in the common areas, in the hallways, and he didn't clean up after the dog. We went and talked with him. We talked to him on numerous occasions. Most of the time, he denied it was his dog. He said, couldn't have been my dog, blah, blah, blah. On a few occasions, he got belligerent. So what are we to do? Under House Bill 2004, we would have had to prove that his dog was defecating, which he denied, or the tenants that were neighbors would have to see the dog and go to court and testify that they saw the dog defecating. It just wouldn't happen. It would cost thousands of dollars in legal fees. It would cost time in court and time for the legal process to follow through in order to get rid of him. Eventually, we did have to give him a no-cause eviction, and he went on his merry way and found another apartment. Had that gone to court, he would not have been able to find another apartment because that would become part of the credit report record and part of the financial records that most landlords check these days. And once they see a for-cause eviction on somebody, they wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole. So it hurts the prospective tenant to force the landlords into a for-cause eviction process. Many of the proponents have argued that landlords use rent, the no cause for rent raises, retaliation, and discrimination. This makes no sense. If we want to raise rents, we give a rent raise notice. It costs over $2,000 to turn over a unit. I'm in the business of keeping units full, not of evicting people. If we were to retaliate against somebody, we would lose the income from that unit. Plus, there's anti-retaliation laws already on the books. I guess I'll stop there. I've got more.
Thank you. And we have your testimony for the record. So
thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Next up, we have Sybil Hebb, Jay Verdugo, Elaine Friesen-Strang, and Robin Honnell. And on deck, we will have Paul Cawthorn, Richard Wilson, Scott Smith, and Ronald Q. Ronald Q.
Or just Q.
Mr. Q.
James Bond.
Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair Gelser, members of the committee, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here today in support of House Bill 2004A, and I very much appreciate the work of the sponsors as well as the committee in giving the time for this discussion today. As you know, the mission of the Oregon Law Center is to provide access to justice to low-income communities across our state. And all across our state, in every county in the state, what we hear from our clients is housing is the biggest issue impacting their lives. The stability of housing, as we know and as we've heard, is so important and so critical to a parent and to a family, to a senior, to an individual's ability to protect themselves, to stay safe and healthy, and to go about their daily lives, and to achieve justice and crawl out of poverty if they're there. What we have found is that a recent Harvard study shows what we know to be true, which is that eviction is not only something that happens to people who are low income and struggling, it is something that causes people to become low income and struggling. Once you have an eviction, especially in a market like this with vacancy rates the way that they are and with rental prices the way that they are, we see the impact of eviction as causing job loss as people are forced to move away from their communities. It causes school disruption as people are having to leave school districts because they can't find a new place to live within the school district. We had a client from Grants Pass, Oregon, with a 17-year-old daughter who was struggling, given a no-cause eviction when the building was sold and many people were asked to move. She spent 2 weeks in a motel because there was no place to go. She ran out of money. She spent 2 months homeless, living in the car, trying her best to keep her daughter in school. Her daughter missed too many days of school. She's no longer on track to graduate this year. So these are the very real cases and very real impacts of eviction. And we want to make sure that there's fairness before something that critical and devastating happens to a family. We want to make sure that there's a cause, that either the tenant has done something wrong, in which case there's a process to go about making sure that there's eviction in that circumstance, or that the landlord has a legitimate business or personal reason to terminate the tenancy, in which case there's some assistance for that tenant. And that's what the bill is designed to provide. I want to make it clear that I have landlords as friends. I know many, many landlords are fantastic landlords, and most of the people in this room would never do some of the things that we've heard about. But the fact is that our no-cause eviction is ripe for abuse. It allows for abusive practices to happen if there is a bad actor. And what we want is the state and the statute to protect people from that bad action. We have heard that for-cause notices are too hard to use and that no-cause notices are necessary in order to get rid of bad tenants. I want to say that that's not the case. Every single example we've heard is an example of a for-cause that is allowed under the statute, and there are much much shorter time frames for those that allow quicker eviction. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sybil. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Elaine Friesen-Strang, and I'm the volunteer state president for AARP Oregon. And AARP is pleased to support this bill to protect renters from no-cause evictions and extreme rent increases. An important aspect of AARP's work in Oregon is advocating for livable and age-friendly communities, which includes expanding housing options and ensuring access to affordable, safe, accessible homes for Oregonians of all ages and all abilities. Our research tells us that 90% of people over the age of 65 want to remain in their homes or in their communities as they get older. However, that reality is in jeopardy because of the unprecedented housing crisis throughout our state. It's estimated that the number of older adult renter households will more than double between now and 2035. In Oregon today, over 40% of renters age 50 and older are cost burdened, meaning that they're paying more than one-third of their income on housing. But more alarmingly is that almost 39% of renters age 65 and older and 55% of those 85 and older are paying more than 50% of their income on housing. Many renters today live in fear of being evicted, as you've already heard, without a valid reason or with as little as 30 days notice. Just recently, an AARP member from Lane County shared her story. Upon informing her landlord of two cases of theft from the balcony of her apartment, the landlord, instead of taking steps to ensure her sense of security, threatened to evict her if she complained again. For people with disabilities and older renters living on fixed incomes, finding an affordable, accessible home on a short notice can be near impossible. Our current laws render them especially vulnerable. For older adults, loss of a home can mean loss of community ties, displacement, even premature, unnecessary, and costly institutionalization that takes a toll on taxpayer dollars. If we believe in the premise of age-friendly planning, we need to consider the impact of forcing individuals from their homes and the communities at a time in their lives when they need natural supports the very most. The average Social Security benefit in Oregon is $1,250 a month, and it's the sole income for 3 out of 10 older Oregonians. This makes finding and keeping an affordable home a real challenge. We need to allow Oregon cities and counties to consider and enact rent stabilization policies to meet the needs of their communities. So, on behalf of the 500,000 AARP members age 50 and older throughout our state, we urge you to support this bill. And thank you for your leadership and commitment to make our region age-friendly and a livable place for people of all ages and all abilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. So first of all, thank you, Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee.
I'm moved up. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My name is Nicta Verdugo, and I live in Talent, Oregon, so Southern Oregon, and I work with Unite Oregon as their field organizer. And as a field organizer, I get to work with a lot of community members. And one of the things that we've been doing for the last few months is going door-to-door and talking to our community members about their experience with no-cost eviction and also rental hikes. And just to give some statistics, specifically in Southern Oregon, of the 186 community surveys we have collected thus far, 82% of them are working folks. And of these 82%, 66% of them had at least one rent increase in the last year. Two-thirds pay over 30% of their income on rent, and one-third pay over 50% of their income on rent. So what does this mean for my community in Southern Oregon? So what this means is that nearly half of them struggle to pay full rent on time. Nearly half of them struggle to afford groceries. 41% of those with children struggle to afford childcare, and one in three struggle to pay full amount on basic utilities such as electricity, gas, water, and garbage. And finally, two-thirds of our community members have reported having anxiety due to their housing situations. And I've heard from other folks that just building more housing will be a solution, but I feel like I disagree with that, because there's more to that. one of our community members had a no-cause eviction, and it was due to one of the reasons given to him was that he was being, his exercise machine was too loud for the neighbors, and so that was one reason why he was evicted. When he in advance had checked in with their with his neighbors and made sure that if that would be a problem. So I feel like on that basis, we cannot protect our renters if only just by giving them more housing. It's more of the renter's protection and the reasons why folks are being evicted. So from this data and our conversations with our community, it is clear that one, the lack of renter's protections creates a dangerous power imbalance with families facing retaliation and discrimination. And two, that families of our community are being put at risk of becoming homeless due to constant evictions and rental hikes. So in closing, if we are to solve this crisis, we must all work together to ensure that we have both renter protections and additional affordable housing. This is not just a Portland isolated issue. It affects our wider rural Oregon communities as well. And as a community-based organization that has worked on housing issues in the Rogue Valley for over a decade, we're very concerned about this. So today we strongly encourage you to support HB 2000.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Senator Gelser, Senator Olson, and committee members. I'm Robin Hanel. I'm professor of economics emeritus at American University. And next year, I'm going to be the presidential distinguished visiting professor at Willamette University, right across the street from you. I also live in Northeast Portland, which happens to be the most rapidly gentrifying zip code in the entire United States. It's no secret that Oregon is experiencing a crisis. Oh, and I've submitted longer testimony on your website. So,
thank you.
Because I know I have to be brief here. It's no secret that Oregon is experiencing a crisis in affordable housing. In Portland, rents for one-bedroom apartments adjusted for inflation rose by 82% since 2011. And in 2016, rents rose by 1.5% per month. All economists know that the long-run solution is to increase the supply of affordable housing. But this cannot be done in the short run and will be difficult to accomplish soon in the circumstances that we find ourselves. Housing's not only a basic need, but also a big-ticket item in many families' budgets. So as long as inequality of wealth and income continue to escalate, as they have in the U.S. now for over 30 years, more and more households will become unable to afford market-price housing. The federal government has drastically reduced spending on affordable housing and shows no sign of getting back in the business of supplying more affordable housing in the near future. And as I don't need to remind you, the state of Oregon is facing a $1.6 billion shortfall and struggling to raise taxes enough to prevent K through 12 public education from deteriorating even further than it already has, which makes it difficult for you to appropriate sizable funds for increasing the supply of affordable housing right now. So as inequality continues to rise, no sizable subsidies can be expected from either the federal or the state government, it is simply unrealistic to wait for the crisis of affordability to resolve itself. And while we all continue to search for creative ways to expand the supply of affordable housing significantly, and I want to emphasize that word significantly because that is what is now required, something must be done to limit rent increases in what have become some of the hottest rental markets in the country. The only relief the state legislature can provide in the here and now is to pass HB 2004, which lifts the 35-year ban on local rent stabilization programs in Oregon. You need to allow local governments to address a crisis you can do little about yourselves, at least for the time being. Give local jurisdictions the ability to use the only tool that can mitigate and escalating problems for the foreseeable future. Rent stabilization programs alone cannot prevent undesirable social dynamics we're experiencing. Rent stabilization programs do not provide the long-run answer because they don't increase the supply of new affordable units. But rent stabilization programs can mitigate the damage while we're looking for longer-term solutions.
Great. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. All right. Next up, we've got Paul Cawthorn, Richard Wilson, Scott Smith, and Ronald Q. And on deck, we're going to have Koya Crespin, Trell Anderson, Michael Adara, and Beth Kellen.
From now on, I want everybody to remember that I've been escalated to vice president. You know what they said.
Mm. He would also like a banana. All right, please. Welcome. Nice to see you, Paul. Yeah,
hi, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. My name is Paul Cawthorn. I live in Benton County in Corvallis. And I've had rental properties over the last 10, 15 years. Had a lot of experience with property management and dealing one-on-one with tenants. I think that something that gets forgotten is that every landlord-tenant relationship is unique. They're not the same thing. You can't just go, well, we're just gonna make this plan and it's all gonna be the same, because that's not how it works, because it's individual relationships. There are bad landlords and there are bad tenants, but there are but those aren't the norms. Most people are good people. Most landlords and tenants are good people. And so I think we need to go from that perspective that, we hear about these worst case scenarios, but a lot of times landlords aren't bringing you those worst case scenarios. It's the tenant advocates. The landlord-tenant law is a time-tested set of agreements that gives balance to this complicated relationship. And so just making massive changes to it are going to have consequences. One thing I believe is this bill, if passed, will drive out more mom-and-pops, landlords that manage their own properties, that give special consideration to tenants, will look at individual situations and maybe sometimes give a tenant a break if they can understand the situation. So I please encourage you to reject HB 2004A and leave the Landlord-Tenant Act the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Scott Smith. Hi, my name is Scott Smith, and I'm from Eugene. Thank you for the opportunity to address this panel. Yesterday I read in its entirety the HB 2004 is amended, and this bill makes many drastic changes to the way housing providers are going to do business in Oregon. And to make so many changes under an emergency clause is, in my opinion, it's not reasonable to housing providers. Although my biggest issue with HB 2004A is the fact that it's going to take away a property owner's right to take their property back. I'm here to fight for my rights. Tenant advocates are fighting for rights that they want to take from people like me. 19 years ago, I began the process of acquiring 11 duplexes. This is my retirement plan. This is my PERS. I started 19 years ago with the expectation of how the rules were in place at the time, and now the rules are going to be changed. I'm concerned that if I was to try and sell one of my properties as a duplex to somebody wanted to own or occupy one side of it, because of the fact that I have more than four units, I would be prevented from selling it to them potentially because of the way lenders would look at them regarding they'd want it to be vacant before they could buy it. There absolutely needs to be a way for managers and landlords and owners to be able to end a relationship with the tenant if things aren't going well. Just because some people abuse a right does not mean that should be taken away from the people that need it. I mean, all of our rights can be abused at different times, but we don't take them away for that reason. There's going to be few options for managers and landlords under HB 2004A. There'll be a 24-hour notice of eviction, which is only useful if you have essentially a police report or something very serious, or then you would go with a 30-day cause notice, which actually would require that you prove that a violation occurred once when the notice was issued, and then if the violation occurred again, then that would actually be a termination. So this is going to embolden bad actors. Other people have talked about it. I'm talking about bad actors that are tenants that are going to, they're going to find out quickly that, hey, they can get away with a lot more if a tenant has to, or a landlord has to prove that there was a violation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Ron Quiring, and I'm a mom and popper, and I thank you all for allowing me, giving me the opportunity to speak today. So 90% of businesses have a sign on their storefront which reads, "We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone." And all of us here today know exactly why such a policy is in place. We also know that such a right gets used very sparingly. If you enact this bill, you are in effect barring landlords this right in their business practice. Other than non-payment of rent, this bill effectively ends the vast majority of remedies we have as landlords to deal with bad tenants and bad tenant issues. Think of it this way. Currently, the threat of a 90-day notice of termination is something of a motivating factor for tenants to comply with rules. Just think of it no longer applies. It would give tenants the de facto right to do almost anything they want, because tenants will know it will be very difficult and expensive for a landlord to attempt to kick them out. Big complexes will use lawyers for the extreme tenant problems because they have deep pockets and they know that sometimes getting rid of a tenant at any cost is better than letting them hang on. Little guys like me, we don't have the money. And really, is throwing money at the legal system the best way to deal with such tenant issues? Really? I fully understand that this is important to lower both turnovers, that it is very important to lower both turnovers and rent rate increases, but honestly, this is an absolutely disastrous way to attempt to do it. Look at it this way. If you can't stop tenants from causing problems or damage, then how is a landlord going to get reimbursed for the cost of these issues? Landlords would just pass on all these costs to all of the tenant community via higher rents. I can guarantee you here today that if this bill is enacted, after 25 years in the landlording business as a mom and popper here in Oregon, I'm going to call it quits, as will many other small and poppers. To so many, our rights have been eroded with previous legislation over the last few years, but this one would be the Lollapalooza of them all. If this bill becomes, this bill will become a lawyer's paradise and create such a moral hazard for dealing with bad tenants and bad issues and bad tenant issues. The answer is more supply and a market-based system. Since I have a couple of other seconds, so a lot of this conversation seems to be dealing with no-cause evictions today, and I will tell you that I think that there are three reasons. Greed, which is shameful, and we should be able to figure out a way to deal with it. Retaliation or discrimination, which I think that there is more power on the consumer or the residents or the tenants' part to deal with that in our legal system in Oregon. And bad tenants. If you make this rule, we cannot get rid of bad tenants. I have no problem as a landlord dealing with greedy guys who want to put new windows in and granite and then raise the rent $500. And I have no problem dealing with retaliation and discrimination because it's very bad. It's the no cause. It's the bad tenants that are the issue. Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I really appreciate the time to and your patience to hear all of this stuff going on. My name is Richard Wilson. I live in Woodburn. I'm a native Oregonian. In fact, my ancestors settled Oregon on the second wagon train to come here, so my roots go deep. I'm almost 70 years old, and I'm slowly being eaten up by cancer. My wife and I rent a nice, modest home surrounded by great neighbors. We've lived there for 5 years, and we're planning on being there a lot longer. The rent is a bit high, but we get by on what we can scrape up in Social Security. We get along great with the owner, have no problems, and there's no rent increases in sight. This is our 60-day no-cause notice of termination. We received this shortly after HB 2004 was passed out of the House. I asked the owner, why is this happening? He said that HB 2004 was the last straw, and he's decided to sell all these rental properties and move his money to Nevada or Texas. He said, and I quote, "I depend on the money I make on my rental properties to fund my retirement. I'm not going to own a property in a city where an activist city council can decide that I can't raise my rents even though my taxes, insurance, and maintenance costs are increasing. I'm also not going to own rental properties in a state where the state tells me how and when I can terminate a tenant who's not performing or taking care of my property the way I want. And frankly, I see his point and don't really blame him. So we are frantically looking for another home with no luck. I've contacted several property management companies from Portland to Albany, and I'm hearing the same story. Owners are selling off their rentals. From what I'm hearing, it appears that overall the rental inventory has decreased around 20%, with more to come, all because of the threat of the passage of HB 2004. We cannot find a place to move, and panic is starting to set in, at least for our kids anyway, because that's where we'll be going. Our home's owner told us the only way we can stay is if HB 2004 does not pass. If that happens, he won't sell. Esteemed senators, HB 2004 is already harming tenants. If this is happening to us, then the same thing is happening to thousands of others. If HB 2004 passes, it will only cause more damage and will not protect tenants one iota. Please, 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 I beg of you, do the right thing and kill this well-meaning but horrendous bill before the hardworking, and I might add voting, folks of Oregon are harmed further. And if for some reason you can't get past party politics, then refer this to the voters and let them decide. Thank you for doing the wise thing and ending this here and now.
Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. All right, next up we have Beth Kellen, Michael Adira, Trell Anderson, and Koya Crespin. And on deck we'll have Linda Lavelle, Jessica Greenlee, Bobby Carrillo, and David Nace, which may end up being our last panel.
It's all right.
And please feel free to go ahead and start so we can keep moving through.
My name is Koya Crespin. I'm from North Portland. I had some things prepared to say, but I actually just wanted to share my story. In October, just before the holidays, my entire building received no-cause eviction notices. We are primarily a building of single parents, immigrants. And when I received this notice, I was not shocked because they had staggered out the notices, clearly so they could make some money while they were putting out the rest of the notices. So I had heard from my neighbors that the notices were coming. As a single parent, I worked until I was 7 months pregnant overtime to take care of my kids. I have paid my rent on time for the past 6 years. We do our best to maintain our property, take care of it. And I don't know about any landlord-tenant relationship that is amicable. I feel like this is something that's almost a myth. I wish that I could have that with my landlord. But unfortunately, that's not the case. It's clear that our landlord wants us out, never even took the time to meet us. But we are undesirable renters to our landlord for no other reason but who we are. My daughter is in first grade. She takes ballet at school. She takes tennis at school. Her school is one of stability, and I am fighting to keep my daughter in the same school so that she can thrive and become better than I am. And that's the goal for all of us. We want our next generation to be better than we are. And it's really, really difficult when every time I come home with my children, there might be a spare piece of paper lying on the ground, or there might be a menu that someone has put in my door. The look of panic on my daughter's face for any reason that we can be put out of our home, and we don't know why. We don't know why this is happening to us. And it takes a toll. It takes a lot out of you every day to come home to your home that you are taken care of for your landlord. You are busting your butt to make rent on time so that they can pay their mortgage. Because, see, we are business partners.
And it takes a toll out of you every day to come home and wonder, is there going to be a piece of paper on my door saying I'm not good enough to live here? Thank you.
Thank you. And what's your daughter's name?
Soraya.
Soraya, you have been fantastic through a very long hearing. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Beth Kellen, and this is my son, Max. I own and manage two properties serving three families and 10 individuals in the Portland area. One of those rentals is a Section 8, and our tenant has been there for over 8 years. I am also a realtor, and I work in the residential market and have helped many clients to purchase both investment and their own properties. I am here today to add my strong support as a landlord and a realtor to HB 2004. I truly believe that landlords should be able to make a profit on their rentals, and the amendments to HB 2004 guarantee that. But what is happening in our market has gotten out of hand. No-cause evictions are unnecessary, and they're harmful. I've been managing properties for 12 years, and I've never needed to use a no-cause eviction. I have, however, been able to utilize the FED on two different occasions for tenants that were not performing to the way that they had agreed. I believe that we also have a responsibility to our tenants to be fair and compassionate. I don't believe this is a good landlord versus bad tenant issue or bad landlord versus good tenant issue. This is a housing issue, a community issue, an affordability issue, and a homelessness issue. The allowable exceptions to the no-cause eviction are more than reasonable and allow for legitimate reasons for no-cause eviction. Something has to change, and this is a well-thought-out bill that does not infringe on my rights as a landlord or a property owner. The exemptions under the bill are reasonable, and the only reason a landlord should issue a no-cause eviction is the exemptions under the bill are reasonable and are the only reason that a landlord should issue a no-cause eviction. If I choose to sell my property, remodel, or move into the property, that is allowed under the new bill. If I have a problem with a tenant who's participating in illegal activity, damaging my property, or causing problems with other tenants, I also have the right, under the for-cause statute, to evict faster and more efficiently. As a landlord, I care about my tenants and my properties, and I work with my tenants for reasonable and manageable rent increases as the market changes. All of this would continue to be allowed under HB 2004. Our tenants are part of the fabric of our community and should be treated as such, not tossed out unnecessarily or for egregious monetary gain. Reasonable actions from the state will create a more stable market. In my community, no-cause evictions and rent spikes bring chaos and instability to families and burden our community and community services. The bottom line is that no-cause evictions are unnecessary and harmful. I urge you to vote yes on HB 2004. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Geltzer and Vice Chair Olson. My name is Trell Anderson. As a kid, I grew up in low-income neighborhoods and spent many afternoons and evenings in public housing around dinner table of many generous families who would take me in and give me a safe place in the nights and food from their table. And I'm very thankful for them. And fortunately, I'm here today as the executive director of Caritas Housing, which is the housing development arm of Catholic Charities. At Catholic Charities, we have a portfolio across Oregon of affordable rental housing of nearly 800 units in many communities, including Sandy, Cambie, Molalla, Portland, Beaverton, Hillsboro. We own property in Douglas County, and we're currently acquiring property that is privately owned. It's about to flip to market rate, but we're going to step in and save this property. It's three properties, two in Rogue River and one property in Glendale. We're a mission-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to serving and housing low-income folks. But I'm not here alone today. I've been asked to represent the 50 nonprofit organizations who are members of the Oregon Opportunity Network, a group of like-minded, mission-based organizations that have a portfolio of over 30,000 units across the state. Together, we provide safe and secure place for almost 74,000 people to sleep every night, men and women, children, veterans, seniors, people with disabilities, victims of domestic violence, and working people. And together across the state, we're supportive of House Bill 2004A. We've heard a lot of testimony from others who oppose this bill, and I'm frankly fascinated to hear how different we work within current landlord-tenant law. We very rarely, if ever, use a no-cause eviction. We are dedicated to working with tenants. There's a process to do that under current tenant-landlord law. And again, I'm fascinated to hear how people don't use what's currently in place. Our deliberations here today, it's similar to regulatory actions that have been taken by reasonable legislatures. Legislators have taken for air and water pollution control, consumer protections in the banking industry, information disclosure in home mortgage predatory lending. That is, when an industry runs wild in a heated market that results in a negative impact on people and families, then legislative intervention is necessary, such as fair housing laws, such as the Uniform Relocation Act. That's why we're here now. That's why this is important. Finally, Harvard sociologist Matthew Desmond published Evicted last year in 2016 after his observations of 8 months in Milwaukee with tenants and landlords. His take on this is that evictions is a core reason, a core issue that continues to perpetuate the cycle of poverty. We have an opportunity to get in front of this. I hope we can get it done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Mike Edera. I live in Portland. In 2002, my late wife and I bought a property in Scappoose, which is a rental, a home house rental. For the 15 years I've owned it, basically we average about under 3% rent increase a year. We managed to put in a new roof, a new floor, a new furnace, take care of what needed to be done, pay off the property, and it provides a modest income for me. So basically, how this bill will affect me as a small landlord, I'm not going to notice it. It's really not going to affect me. It's going to affect me as a father, though, of a son with severe mental illness who's been homeless since November. One of the big roadblocks for him to regain stability is finding housing, and it's just really, without getting into the particulars, the legal particulars, it is a huge roadblock, and it's cost the communities he's in thousands of dollars in emergency hospitalization, in incarceration, in police. As the state of Oregon faces a budget deficit, these services are under strain. A red-hot real estate market is contributing, as the gentleman before me just mentioned, is contributing externalities. It's costing the state. It's costing the taxpayers. This is HB 2004 is a bill that has no revenue impact on the state, and it really is a necessary action to take right now. So I really urge you to pass that bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And our last panel for today, unfortunately, because we're running out of time, is Linda Lavelle, Jessica Greenlee, Bobby Carrillo, and David Nace. And I know there are many, many, many people on both sides that we have not had the opportunity to get to today. So we're going to hold the written record open through Friday. So if you've written down the comments that you're going to share, send them on the agenda, I believe, is the Senate Human Services Committee email, and we will get those into the record, and all the committee members will have access to that, and all the members of the legislature and the public will have access to all of those as well. So by Friday afternoon, just try to get those in. And welcome.
I'll start since you're looking at me.
Left to right, right?
That's not the way it is for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Chair. Thank you all, committee, for having us here. And my name is David Nace. I'm a property manager in the city of Beaverton in Portland. And I am here opposed to this bill. The reason for that, I'm going to read from this. With rental applications, it is often difficult to whether a potential candidate is a good tenant or not. You really can't tell sometimes, especially with fair housing laws and other laws that are in effect. I would like to give you a couple examples, but I'm going to give you one. I had a tenant in Wilsonville, Oregon, which is in Clackamas County, a few years back, who ran a chop shop. And the reason I knew this is because I got lucky and he got busted. And but I had two tenants move out because of this man. I gave him a no-cause notice. He fought the no-cause notice. He took me to court. He was able to force me to, because he said it was discrimination, and he was able to force me to give cause. I lost the case. It cost us $3,500. And as a result of it, two tenants moved. One was a very young couple, very nice young couple, and the other was a single mother with three young children under the age of 10. She had to go. This guy was very threatening, very abusive, and yet they could not testify because of fear of retaliation. Furthermore, I said it earlier that I got lucky. This man got busted. The police hauled him off. I ended up, you know, getting the apartment back after paying $3,500 and losing two good tenants. I would also like to point out that I am a manager of 350 units, 75 of which are single family units, which are just houses. I have three of them that have gone on listing already. And to say that this bill is not going to affect the housing market, it's crazy, because it already has, and it hasn't even passed. None of these units are in Portland, by the way. They're all in Beaverton and Hillsboro. And so the 75 units are probably going to be sold eventually to people that are going to live on there. So there goes 75 units of potential rentals that will never be rentals. So now your rental market has gone down. You know, so to think that this will not have an effect, it's crazy. And so I'm out of time, but thank you, you guys. You also have this, by the way. All of you should have it, so including you. I delivered yours this morning.
Thank you very much. Hi, I want to thank you for inviting us here. My name is Linda Lavelle. I am opposed to the House Bill 2004. This House bill would take away a standard set of rules for landlords in the whole state of Oregon. It would allow different localities to create their own local rental control, thus increasing management costs and increase rents. Note, the tenants can give a 30-day notice with or without cause and can move, period. Landlords can only terminate their contract for cause, which can be tricky and expensive to execute. These costs would only drive up rents. This can also leave the landlord's property in the hands of bad actors for months, costing landlords thousands of dollars without any sure way of getting it back. This can also leave other tenants in harm's way. Landlords will not be able to thoughtfully manage their properties and protect other tenants. This House bill could force landlords to be landlords as long as the tenant wants to remain in the property. This bill will force landlords to increase rents on innocent tenants to pay so they can pay the relocation fees for problem tenants. This bill discourages small landlords from staying in the business because of the increasingly one-sided, complex landlord-tenant law. This additional legal expenses prevents landlords from keeping the rents low and ends affordable housing. Only the lawyers on both sides get rich. This bill does nothing to increase the supply of affordable housing. Instead, it employs more lawyers. This House bill tries to lay the responsibility on one group of people, the landlord, to fix the supply problem. It's like telling a cab driver, we have a car shortage, and it's his fault. The solution
to this problem is to increase supply. It is the local and state government's responsibility to zone the land and provide the infrastructure for new houses, not the landlords. Increasing the urban growth boundary, increasing neighborhood density, making building single and multifamilies more affordable through decreasing the front permit cost and possibly limiting home sizes and types is the real solution. More homeowners equals less demand on the rental market. The government has created this housing shortage, not the landlords. I can say from my own experience, I had somebody who was throwing lit cigarette butts in a recycling bin. I had to move it, and then he went and he started flicking cigarette butts behind people's in their backyards, and people finally were able to say something to me. They were so fearful of this guy, and I gave him a 30-day. He got out. My other tenant stayed. Thank you.
Hi there, Senators. Thank you for your time today. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. My name is Jessica Greenlee, and I'm actually a renter myself, so I understand the other side of this picture as well. I think everyone in the room can probably agree that with the rapid growth of population in Oregon and its popularity, that there is a clear need for more affordable housing. However, HB 2004 asked the private sector to shoulder this alone. We're essentially a victim of our own success with that. But HB 2004, by doing this in rent control markets, interest rates go up. There's a 200 to 250 basis point premium that's charged by lenders in rent control markets. That's 2 to 2.5% additional carrying costs on loans. You know, this is already impacting the market for future development, and that's the one thing we need is more housing. You know, lenders are already factoring in the fact that this conversation is occurring on the state level and that there's the potential of this moving forward. There are a lot of other bills that are out there right now that I would love to see this committee support, specifically 2210, 2456, that help incentivize and subsidize affordable housing and the creation of that, as well as SB 794, which provides temporary assistance to renters in need. It more equally disperses the burden, essentially, of providing that housing assistance across the entire population. Instead of asking, again, just the private sector to handle this. It's a public problem. It's built based because of public policy. The urban growth boundary has restricted density as far as where you can build housing considerably. And as, you know, we've had this net in migration has caused this problem. And I think you guys are all very aware of that. Inclusionary zoning, which was put in place in Portland just a couple of months ago, is already having an impact on development in that area. You're looking at $3.12 a square foot just to make it pencil. And that's without any parking. And that's only can you afford to build that within the urban core. I know the design review process in Portland is currently under review, which I am incredibly grateful for, because that process alone added almost 50 cents a square foot to rents to the cost of the building that I'm working on 105th and Burnside, which I've pushed really hard to make sure it's workforce housing and it's tucked under current market rents. So there's a lot of other tools that cities have available to them outside of this particular bill that could benefit the market and add additional supply in the right categories. I don't want to go over time, but I have a lot more to
say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
My name is Bobby Carrillo, and I am a portfolio manager in Portland, and I also work for a developer and a builder who is also considering not building the 500 units that he wants to build at this time. So this rent control is an experiment that has failed in every state and country it's been tried in. Why, with all the housing issues going on in Oregon, would we want to be part of an experiment when there are clear ways to remedy our housing situation? If approved, rent control will become a larger issue. Owners will not have the funds to maintain the integrity of their investment. In turn, the owner will be called a slumlord and have to deal with fines and assessments from the city, again, due to something that we can control at this moment by not approving rent control, and this will be a never-ending cycle. It seems crazy to me that we will listen closely to scientists regarding climate change, but will not listen to the very educated economists that have all said that rent control is a failure. We need to look at the actual cost, what it is to run multifamily housing. Now, more and more tenants are being held less responsible for their damages, lease violations, and even their own rents. These costs are being absorbed by owners. So let's talk about reality. Paying relocation costs to a bad tenant that already has been issued a 90-day notice to destroy an apartment or home, again leaving an average cost of repair and replacement around $2,000 to $5,000, and after paying these ridiculous move-out costs between $2,900 to $4,500, do you realize the owner can have an expense up to $10,000 to vacate a bad tenant? That's a huge expense for a landlord. Excuse me. So obviously this will deter anyone wanting to participate in owning or investing in multifamily housing. Speaking of no-cause notices, people keep saying they're no-cause evictions. These are notices. Evictions is an actually FED filed court, and no-cause is a notice. So we give these to people that it's a safe and peaceful way to get them out of their contract. I've been in the industry for 10 years, and I gave somebody a for-cause notice one time. That person came into my office and threatened to burn my car up with my children in it if I didn't rescind that notice. So these no-cause notices are a peaceful and safe way for us to deal with these tenants that act out, these bad actors, these bad characters that we talk about. I don't understand, if an owner wants his house back, why should he be held hostage to these notice restrictions? The real issue is something that we all learned in the eighth grade, supply and demand. Let us look at how difficult it is to build in Portland. Coming together with the city to agree on things as simple as the color of building bricks or siding, this is what is consuming the time of builders wanting to build in our city. The permit process takes an obscene amount of time. The adversarial atmosphere between owners and tenants is scaring away investors, not just in Portland, but the entire state of Oregon. In conclusion, I feel the housing crisis solution is obvious. Make the process easier for investors and builders. Stop villainizing the owners and landlords when the housing issue really boils down to city decisions and their time management problems. Once this happens, the elementary problem of supply and demand will subside, and you will see more affordable housing and many more multifamily homes available.
Thank you very, very much. We have so many more people that we have not been able to get to, and I apologize for that. But again, we'll keep the record open through Friday, so if you've come and you had testimony prepared, you can send that in writing, and I will read it. I know our colleagues will read it as well. And if you haven't written it down, this is your chance to go and write down what you would have said, or maybe you did testify and now you want to say something else after listening to everybody else. In terms of what will happen next, we will take under advisement all of this information, have some conversations, and probably return to this discussion in the near future. But I really appreciate everyone for coming today and making the time to be here. And with that, I am closing the public hearing on House Bill 2004A. And just reminding people, there is a hearing in this room that starts in about 5 minutes, so we need to clear up pretty quickly. And let me adjourn. I can't. And we are adjourned. Let me adjourn. I can't. And we are adjourned. And